You're listening to the Hidden Killers podcast with Tony Bruschi.
Featuring author, guest, and criminal defense lawyer, Laurie Hellis.
We're talking about the appeal of Lori Vallow Daybell right now and how mental health plays into it. But if she doesn't want to have an image out there of being crazy, which she's going to have no matter what, why? I mean, does she have a say in this? I mean, can the attorneys go and file this appeal on their own merit without her even agreeing to it and argue this? Or does she have to sign that off saying, yes, I want to appeal and I want it to be on these grounds?
So she does determine whether or not there'll be an appeal.
Mm-hmm.
But the grounds of the appeal, they are going to be advising her on what they think the grounds of the appeal are, the best opportunity for appeal is going to be.
Okay.
Now, she has been appointed a new appellate attorney, which is very typical that once the trial attorneys have done their work and the appeal is filed, then a new attorney is appointed to handle the appeal, because appellate work is very different from trial work. So she has a new attorney who's advising her on what the grounds will be. I think that it's a little bit of an opening for the attorneys to get around her desire not to use the mental health defense. Because this really is about whether or not she should have ever gone to trial in the first place because of her competence. And that is an open book at this point. That's already out there. So I think they feel comfortable saying, look, even though our client didn't want us to present her mental health issues at trial, we still, the issue of whether she was competent at the time she stood trial is an issue that's out there. And I think they feel comfortable in arguing that in spite of her saying, I don't want people to think I'm crazy.
Well, I guess why argue it? If you have a client that doesn't think she's crazy, fully believes that she's talking to her dead children, and she thinks the end is about to happen, and we're all crazy for even trying her for this because she's going to go and be the queen of Rexburg soon. Why spend the resources? I guess is the question for someone who doesn't really want this, thinks everything is going to be this other way. Why are we even doing this? I mean, I don't even get the point, other than it almost seems like it's now being done for everyone but the person it should be being done for.
Well, I think at this point, it's one of her better bases of appeal.
Sure.
And I think that, lawyers have to walk that fine line because they have to carry out the case in the way their client wants, but they also have an ethical obligation to do their very best for their client and to zealously represent their client's interests. So
it almost feels in some ways, though, like this is someone who is on their deathbed. And I know she's not, I'm not saying it that way, but I'm saying someone who doesn't want the resuscitation. They have the do not resuscitate thing going on.
Right.
She's already said, I'm not crazy. I don't want to be presented as being crazy. Da, da, da. Yet everybody's like, no, you need to have this life support. You need to have this, like, she says she doesn't want it. You know, at some point,
yeah,
crazy or not, you do have to kind of go with what the individual wants, no matter how deplorable they may be. I don't know.
Oh, that's just absolutely right.
It just seems
absolutely right.
If she's not necessarily signing up to be on board 100% with that as a appeal defense, then why? I mean, if she doesn't believe that, then why are we doing it? I guess would be the question.
Well, I think that's a good question. I think we don't know at this point.
Sure.
We don't know whether she's changed her mind, whether she's grasping at straws. I mean, we're not privy to those conversations.
Sure.
So we don't know for sure. But I mean, you're right. All indications from the beginning have been that she did not want to use a mental health defense in any way. And now we're talking about an appeal based on her lack of competence. So I don't know that there's any way for the public to know at this point.
Sure. I mean, if we're just to base it solely on everything that we know about her, everything she has said in her own words, especially the statement that she gave at her sentencing, one would have to almost make that conclusion. But of course, with someone like this who is not mentally right, clearly, I can imagine the opinion changes day to day on her part of what she wants to have done if she ever wants an attempt at freedom again, which obviously that's likely never going to happen.
Right. And, you know, I have represented mentally ill clients before, and it is hard.
Yeah.
I mean, it's a difficult balancing act to make sure that your client's rights are protected and still deal with someone who is not firmly in reality.
Yeah.
It's tough. And I know that. I know that Jim Archibald and Jim Griffin, I'm sorry, wrong lawyer, sorry, Jim Archibald and Thomas had a really tough time.
Yeah.
I know that they did. And I know that there were times that they expressed frustration with the fact that they couldn't defend the case the way that they thought it should be defended.
But
that's a call the client gets to make.
You're consuming the Hidden Killers podcast.
Want more? Start binging on all of our true crime podcasts right now through Apple Podcasts and get an ad-free experience when you sign up to be a True Crime Today Premium Plus member exclusively on Apple Podcasts.
More of the Hidden Killers podcast, dropping soon.
Press subscribe now.